Evolving compulsive overeater.
Hello.
Every time I meet people now, I say that even if I'm not at a meeting. Conference at work. So I would like to introduce our speaker, Carrie. And she's going to tell us her story and share her experience, her strengths, and troubles.
Right on. Do I have any particular focus, or am I just normal? Just normal.
Animal husbandry?
You know what? Don't even. I could go there. Trust me, I can go there. Hello, I am Carrie, compulsive overeater. Pardon my gooiness. So here's the stuff I never remember to tell unless I say it up front. So I've been in program for around 13 and a half years, and I have 12 and a half years of abstinence. What else do I always forget to say? My top weight is probably about 50 pounds more than I am now. My bottom weight is probably 10 pounds more than I am now. I was an attempted anorexic. It didn't go very well. But considering, you know, the volume of food I was capable of eating, 10 pounds more than I was now is actually, it was an impressive attempt. The end of the control era. So what else do I always forget to say? Let me just make sure I'm not leaving anything behind. Those are the big ones. Okay. So, there's that gap, you know, of the year between when I came in and when I was abstinent. If anyone is new here, I don't recommend that as a plan. So if you could not do that, I would suggest that's probably an easier way. But like so many things, I think that's probably that gap. If anyone is in that gap where you're in program but not abstinent, in my experience, I didn't get to choose when I got abstinent. I got to be given the gift of abstinence after a certain amount of labor of love with the steps. So there's that. What else? Let's start at the beginning. I really love food. That would be the beginning. I have always really, really loved food. You know, that love of food was maybe not like the happiest relationship of my life. It didn't necessarily love me back in the same way that I loved it. And it was kind of increasingly bad over time. But in the beginning, you know, I was a collector of food. I was a collector of books about food. I was a collector of places I had been where there was certain types of food. I was a, you know, collector of experiences related to food. And I used to think about it a lot, even between when those times were when I was obtaining the food or chasing after the food or regretting the food. I was kind of thinking about it most of the time. The trick is that I wouldn't have necessarily thought that. I wouldn't have, if you had asked me, like, do you think about food a lot? I would have been like, no more than anyone else. Because, you know, if you've always been crazy, it's hard to see what not crazy looks like. I had just always thought about food too much, and I was surrounded by a group of people who probably thought about food a lot too. So my quantity of food obsession seemed fairly normal. If, you know, the people around me and my life before I came to the program were the norm. You know, I used to chase weights, numbers on the scale. I never got to some kind of weight that was supposed to be the weight to fix everything. I don't know what that weight was supposed to be, but I clearly never arrived there because nothing ever got fixed. You know, I would get to whatever weight I thought I was supposed to, or I'd get near it-ish, or, you know, maybe be heading in the right direction and, you know, whatever. And whenever I got to wherever I thought I was supposed to be, I'd look down and I was like, well, my body's still wrong, so clearly I got that number wrong. Better adjust it. And, you know, kind of where and when I grew up, my body was wrong. I was supposed to be built a different way. Like, there was some other ideal woman that I was supposed to be, and I clearly was not built like her. So it was like, well, I can't have this, so then could I have that? Or if I had this, it was this kind of rationalization, project where, okay, if this part of my body changes, then this part can be okay. But if this part would change, then that part would be okay. Or some kind of, like, evil game with myself of how do I make it okay? How do I make me be whatever being I think somehow that I'm supposed to be. Like, you know, I remember when it occurred to me sometime in recovery, like, my ancestors, who incidentally, I come from a big family, everyone looks exactly like me. We all have the same body. It's like 40,000 versions of exactly the same body. And somehow, all these people throughout history, I can, you know, from that I can guess, like, all my ancestors probably looked pretty much the same. And somehow they all reproduced, you know, like somebody thought they were attractive enough to want to be naked with them. But somehow, like, that, like, a bajillion people throughout space and time who have, you know, been chosen, these people who have my body, who throughout, like, a millennia, I don't know how long, a couple millennia, few millennia, a selection of millennia, who have my body, people have been choosing them for millennia, but somehow my body wasn't good enough. Millennia of people before you, be damned. Like, you know, like that they've all somehow been selected wasn't good enough information for me now. And it was just, I wasn't acceptable. I wasn't in an acceptable form. And I don't know where I got that information from, but I got it pretty strongly. And maybe, you know, maybe I just was born with that feeling of not right, not good enough. So that's the physical part. I ate a lot. I had some control over the type of food I ate for a while or intermittently, and that is the trick of this disease for me, and that stopped me getting, you know, abstinent or staying abstinent for quite a while in this program, because when the food would start to get easier, I would say, oh, I must not have this problem, you know, and I remember thinking about my normal weight, in quotes, there are big, big quotation marks around that, because my normal weight was my normal weight for like a tenth of a second at some point when I was 14, or you know what I mean? Like what I considered to be my normal weight or my normal way of eating was in fact not at all what my normal weight or normal way of eating were. I just chose to pretend those were my norm so I could feel less bad about myself, and so, or honestly, so I could feel more bad about myself because I was never at that weight. And so it was always this like quest to try to get back to my normal weight. Which was, you know, it didn't exist. You know, I tried compulsive exercise because exercise is good for you, which incidentally I understand it is, but not the way I used it. and I, you know, I dieted for years and years and years, and, you know, the diet form changed, but the key was, you know, whatever diet I picked, it was like, there's a certain number of somethings you can have. So the game was always, how do I eat the most volume, the most continuously for my number of calories, fat grams, whatever things that I'm counting at the moment. And you know what? There are ways to eat pretty much all day long and still be in that magical number of whatever things. And what I didn't realize at the time is that I'm triggering this phenomenon of craving for myself over and over and over because I'm always eating. Doesn't matter, like there's no, you know, for whatever, I don't have to eat a certain food to be triggered. For me, anything can trigger me. I have definitely binged on every food pretty much on the planet, like the healthy foods. I've binged on them for years, and that was just the diet, that I was binging on healthy foods all the time. You know, I abused healthy forms of exercise, you know. Like people, you know, people who knew me maybe just thought I was really healthy. But that wasn't at all what was happening. I was insane. But I just hid it under this, you know, lacquer of healthy. And it was not a super fun place to be. Because eventually, even those healthy whatevers would, you know, if I'm starting phenomenon of craving by eating whatever healthy food, then eventually, maybe not today, maybe not this week, at some point I'm going to be binging on whatever's around. That's just the reality for this compulsive overeater. And even so, that didn't, you know, even if I hadn't been, it was still a miserable way to live. Having to eat all the time and think about food and hate myself all the time and try not to eat and having to be in the craving all the time, ugh, that is not a happy place. It's so much easier not to have to live there, to be freed from food the majority of the day. Because it doesn't take that much time to put down a meal. Especially not for a, you know, compulsive reader. It's like a pretty fast process. And then the whole rest of the day is free to do other stuff. I have hobbies now. I have a house I'm renovating. I have, you know, a lawn I'm redoing. I run a volunteer organization now with all that bonus time that I got. That was one of the most amazing things about getting into OA. I was like, oh, my God, there are all these extra hours in the day. Where did they come from? You know, like once the insanity starts, and that was even after working steps and going to meetings and all that, there were still like a bajillion bonus hours every single day. I felt like I'd been given an extra life just for fun. So there was a lot of eating, there was a lot of exercise, you know, there was a lot of dieting. I mean, I got on my first diet when I was a kid, probably prepubescent or right around when puberty hit, because I was like, things are changing, can't control them, let's go on a diet. And somehow that was socially acceptable at my, you know, like, whatever, 12 years of age. And, you know, the diets were always trying to do less so I'd get the result more quickly. Like, try to do less food so you can get the result more quickly, which I understand, again, is not so healthy. But I did it for a while, and then it would always fall apart. I never officially came off the diet. When I started the diet, I never ended it because I never got to the right weight. In quotes, the right way. So then, you know, it gets worse over time in my experience. Like, I need to do more exercise to try to hide what I'm doing with food. I need to try to control what I'm taking in, you know, in a more extreme way, which again, because I'm a volume eater, that just meant eating different foods a lot. It didn't mean, like, I would try to not eat. I thought anorexia sounded like a great idea. And I would, you know, like, if I could not start not eating in the morning, then it wouldn't kick in the phenomenon of craving until later in the day. So, but once then, at that point, I'm hungry, and the phenomenon of craving has kicked in, so, like, I'm a wolverine. I'm just, like, bah, you know, ravenous, eating everything around me. The people around me who had to listen to me blathering on about food and diets and this and my new plan and this. I had so many plans. Oh, to the mind of the God. Like, I had so many plans of, you know, well, if I do, it's the list thing. Like, if I do this much exercise and I have this many calories, fat, grams, whatever, and then I do this and then I don't do this for this many weeks and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's like diet or math, you know. That was my thing, and I was never super great at math, but that form of math, I loved it. If word problems had been all about dieting, I would have done incredibly well with word problems. As it is now, I can't tell you what train is going to get where first. But if they had just used that, I would have learned, you know, calculus with diet math. Like, I would have so been all over that. Anyway, alas, they didn't think the way I thought. Alas, my teachers and the textbook writers must have been more sane than I was. Sure enough, I came along to moving to Los Angeles, and for whatever reason, you know, I was in a new place. I didn't know anybody. I had, much of my life had been about, like, I had to leave the house to get food, and I had to, and getting, going out to get food would kick in the compulsive exercise thing, and then, I don't know, somehow that kept the weight vaguely-ish under control. And then I moved to Los Angeles, and it stopped. It broke. The means by which I had been able to have the illusion of control over food shattered. I couldn't get the diet to start anymore. I couldn't get the exercise to start anymore, and the weight started to come. And I knew I was in trouble because I had no illusions about how strong it was, and I pretty quickly saw that my attempts to control it weren't really working. So I had heard about Overeaters Anonymous somehow, I don't know, and I keep that in mind now when I'm doing 12-step work. If the person's like, and then they just, like, walk off, or, you know, like, oh, that's not for me, thank you, or whatever. You know, I keep that in mind because I don't know how I was 12-stepped. I have a vague feeling that it was something I read, but I don't actually know. And I don't know how long I had the information about OA before I actually was ready to come into OA. But when the time came, when the bottom had risen enough to hit me, that I was ready, the information was there. And, you know, it was pre-internet, so I had to look in the phone book. And, you know, because of our traditions, someone had paid for an ad in the phone book. Like, our donations in the seventh tradition had gone to pay for that ad because, you know, it's not free to have an ad in the phone book. And, you know, they, some, our donations had paid for the phone, and they'd paid for the office, and they'd paid for the paper that the seventh tradition was printed on, and they had paid for the special worker, you know, who called me back or mailed me the 12th stepper. And, you know, the other forms of seventh tradition where all those invisible people were taking their free time when they could have been watching totally delicious, trashy television, and instead they were sitting at their, you know, computer, at their desktop computer even, and they were typing out the, you know, the 12-stepper, and all those people listed in the 12-stepper who had their phone numbers in there, who had set up the meetings, who had all that service done, so that when I was ready for OA, all that service that people had done, they were in fact 12-stepping me into the program. So that when I was ready, I picked a meeting, I avoided it for many months, and then eventually I showed up, and there were people there, and they welcomed me. And, you know, again, because of the traditions, they didn't talk about their religion, they didn't talk about their politics, they didn't talk about anything except for the solution of Overeaters Anonymous. They talked about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, and how they got there. And, you know, I heard the message. And I would have loved a reason to leave. I had come from, I was probably something like an agnostic, but I fancied myself an atheist because that was way cooler. And I came in and, you know, it, sometimes I think back on it, and it was truly a gift that I stayed because, you know, everyone kept saying, God, 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 and they were touching and holding hands and crying. That was my impression of OA. People talking about God, touching, holding hands and crying. I was like, what is this place I have fallen into? What hell have I fallen into? But it was a fascinating hell, and yet there was some kind of truth. And because people didn't talk about their outside issues where I could have been like, I don't believe in that. I don't fit in with these people. I'm going to leave. Like, I was given no excuse, you know. I was given no excuse to leave because it was super like, God, as you understand God, or, you know, group of dieters, or good orderly direction, like whatever. It was vague enough that, you know, with my leanings, I could find a way to stay. And that was a hard one, you know. All the holding hands, praying, crying, God stuff. Because I came from a world where we didn't have emotions. But hello, that's why there was food, so you didn't have to have emotions. Like, what? Like, I don't understand all these people and their, you know, things happening on their face. Like, what is this? What is this? I don't get it. And, you know, I came to get it. I thought it was fascinating. Like I said, at the very beginning, I was like, this is just wild. Like, I feel like I'm in a confessional and all these people are talking to me and like, do they realize we don't actually know each other? We're not friends? Like, it's wild. So, you know, I stuck around and, you know, I did a lot wrong, which, you know, is certainly a fine path for recovery because it eventually led to recovery, you know. I did not get a sponsor. I did not work the steps. I eventually purchased the workbook because I would just do it on my own. You know, who needed a sponsor or anyone to tell me what to do? None of you could really tell me what to do, just to be clear. You know, so I did the self-study program. And again, don't recommend. But if anyone wants to try it, right on, get on it. Maybe it'll be better for you than it was for me. And I had the, like I said, the willingness to stay, that's all I had. I just kept coming back. And, you know, I had no friends. I was new in town, and I was like, this gives me the illusion that I know someone here, like hearing these people talk. And, you know, I thank my higher power for that because I think back, you know, where I'd come from, where I had friends, and I had a social life, like, why would I need to sit with these strangers in a room? But it was like traveling to a foreign country. I'm like, I may not talk to anyone today because I have no friends here. So I'll go listen to these people and talk to them as if I know someone. So, you know, I just stuck around, and I eventually, like, I took service commitments, you know, because I was a good student, and yeah, read all the literature, this fascinating story about drunk men, you know, I was very intrigued. You know, I started reading the OA literature, but it took a while, and slowly but surely, you know, I knew to talk in meetings. Somehow, clearly I have no problem with talking. So, I would talk in meetings. And I have very few memories of that because I was so high on food all the time. It's just foggy. Everything from that era is foggy. A lot of things from my life pre-OA are foggy because I was high constantly. And, you know, in those early days of recovery, I remember my first meeting kind of, They put a seashell in my mouth and said, or they didn't put it in my mouth, that would be weird. They gave me a seashell and said, you know, this is a tradition at this meeting, and, you know, what we say to people is, put this in your mouth, when it dissolves, you're free to eat, you know, which was pretty clever. I never actually put the seashell in my mouth. I do have it still, though. And then I just stuck around and talked a lot of meetings, and I remember going to a meeting and saying, and this was actually a moment of insight, but I didn't know it at the time. I said, you know, my problem is I just can't remember. I just can't remember not to eat in the moment when I'm trying not to eat. And so I wrote this song, and I proceeded to, like, sing a little ditty that I had composed for myself in the OA meeting. Yes, those people were very kind. They were like, keep coming back. Because I really thought, like, I don't remember what it was, thank God. But it was like a reminder song. But of course, I couldn't remember to sing the song to remind myself to remember, you know. That's the cruel joke of this disease. Like, yes, I was right. The problem is I can't remember. You know, the inability to bring into memory with sufficient force, you know, the last debacle, paraphrasing the big book. Like, that's it. Which is that some part of me that is supposed to react to bad stimulus with a, oh no, never again. That part of me when it comes to food is like, oh no, never a what? Is there something else to eat? You know, like, did something else just walk in front of me? You know, it doesn't, like, that part of my brain is broken. It's just broken. And I can pretend that it works. That's what I did before OA for many, many years. And then when I come in here, eventually I come to see, oh, I can't protect myself. That's what powerlessness is. I can have the best plan of eating in the world. I can have the best sponsor in the world. I can go to a bajillion meetings. I went to, my guess is, between 500 and 700 meetings my first year in OA, and I was not abstinent, did not get abstinent, because I hadn't had the spiritual experience necessary to bring about a complete psychic change, which is what the big book tells me has to happen if I don't want to be binging all the time. And that's very weird. Like, why is it this blue textbook called Alcoholics Anonymous, this book we call the big book, why is it that if I just do some things in 164 pages of book, that somehow I go from being loopy-doopy with food to actually being able to be sane with food? Don't know. No idea. But that is, in fact, what happened. And again, you know, I tried to do it on my own, not so effective. I finally got a sponsor, this poor guy, who, you know, he was like, you should get a woman, and she should have your story. And, you know, he said, you know, just because I kept saying, well, I got to find someone who has what I want, and I'm not really sure what I want yet, so how do I pick someone? He was like, okay, just get a temporary sponsor. How about that? Just start with a temporary sponsor. And he's like, it's not permanent. You just do it for a little bit, and then you don't have to work with that person anymore. How about that? And I said, are you available to be my temporary sponsor? And he was like, yes, I am. And, you know, he did what his sponsor had done for him. And that meant going through the big book with me one paragraph at a time, one sentence at a time, one word at a time, and doing what it said. Like, I wanted him to be my palsy pal pal best friend. Like, I wanted to tell him about my day, and I wanted to, like, confide in him and get him to give me, like, skating tips, and you know what I mean? Like, what color should I paint my house? Like, blah, 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 whatever. That's what I wanted from a sponsor. That was not what I needed from a sponsor, I came to find out. And my poor early sponsees, I sponsored them like, we're buddies, which, you know, not super effective, I came to learn. what worked was not making anything up. What worked was he said, like, I don't know, talk to God. I don't know, talk to God. Like, he wouldn't let me ramble. I wanted to just talk about my problems and the food. Blah, blah, blah. He wouldn't let me. He was like, why don't we just, you know, read the big book, work some steps. And so we did. And so we did. And so we did. And so we did. And through that, through him making up nothing, through him knowing nothing, through him instructing me in nothing, through him telling me nothing, abstinence came. And that is a miracle. I'm incredibly grateful to him for not having to be an originator of anything, for just taking me through the big book as it was written. If I didn't know something, I looked it up in the dictionary. And I looked up the word spiritual gave me the heebie-jeebies, and so I looked it up in the dictionary because he told me to, and it said, you know, spirit or spirituality is it's the animating force within all living beings. And, you know, I thought, oh, I can get behind that. That's not too tricky. Like, it's just being, like, alive. And I, you know, at that point I had seen a couple dead people and I knew they were not quite the same as me. And I knew I couldn't reanimate them. And so I couldn't kill them with my eyeballs and I couldn't bring them back to life. So something greater than me was at work. And that was it. That was all it took. That was all it took for me to say, oh, it's not me. I don't actually run the entire universe. I may be a massive megalomaniac, but even I am not quite that foolish to think that I run everything ever, you know? And that was enough. That was enough for me to begin to work the steps, for me to begin to have a spiritual experience, which I definitely did not want. I wanted to be skinny. That's why I came to OBE. I had no interest in spiritual, emotional, blah, blah, blah. I wanted physical. My higher power, being very wise and funny, thought it would be much better if I had to get the spiritual part, then the emotional part, and then eventually on top of all that, when I no longer was paying attention and I had truly given it over, then the physical part changed. But that for me was the way it had to be. It was when I finally said and really meant it, like, you know what, God, I'm done. I don't want this anymore. I don't want to be in charge of food anymore. I can't do it. I'm sick of trying. And if you need me to be 700 pounds, okay. And I meant it. It wasn't like, and now am I going to get what I want? Because I definitely sometimes pray like that. Like, I'm turning it over. Really, am I going to get what I want now? Because I find surrender is very effective. Like, in fact, once I actually surrender, a lot of things do happen that are better. But now I can fake it. Like, I'm fake surrendering because I really want what I want, God. You know? And my higher power is like, nope, you're faking. Sorry. Going to wait a little, you know, longer. But what happened was when I finally gave up any interest in my body, I gave up the control. I gave up what I thought I needed to look like or what I thought I needed to be. Really, and I no longer cared, and I got off the scale. That's when my body started to change. So it's kind of like I don't even know what my top weight in program was. I don't know how long it was before the weight started to come off because I had stopped caring because it was my higher power's domain. And you know, through that process of working the steps, like. That's not to say, you know, the big book and the AA 12 and 12 talk a lot about will, the right application of will. It doesn't say, you know, we don't do anything. We lay around and magical fairies solve all our problems. It says, like, you know, we apply our will. It's my job to apply my will along God's lines, along what I think my higher power would have. And I was like, okay, I feel like my higher power, which wasn't even really anything at the time. Like, I feel like good orderly direction would have me come to meetings because it seems to make things better. I feel like this plan of eating that I've kind of devised seems sane-ish, and my sponsor seems to think it's sane-ish, but he really didn't get into it too much with me. He's like, talk to your higher power. I can't tell you what your plan of eating should be. And he was an anorexic, so his plan of eating was totally different than mine. And, you know, I applied my will towards trying to use that plan, and I failed for a really long time because I'm powerless. If I had power to control what I was eating, I wouldn't be in OA, you know. I'd be sleeping at, oh, early o'clock on a Sunday morning. But I'm powerless. And so eventually what happened is, you know, a spiritual awakening against my will started to happen. I came to understand that I didn't run the whole world and I didn't need to, and that life was easier and much more fun if I didn't try. And then on that foundation, you know, in the AA 12 and 12, my abstinence dates from the last four paragraphs of working the AA 12 and 12. Because in the last four paragraphs, it says basically, like, how do I work a third step? It's a super weird concept. How do I actually turn my will, my life over to a higher power? It's crazy abstract. How does one do that? And so, thank you. Beverage break. You know, so I, in that last four paragraphs, it says, okay, here's how we do that. In all moments of indecision or in all moments of emotional disturbance or indecision, that's funny, I've said it 1,000 times and I distracted myself. In all moments of emotional disturbance or indecision, we pause and we say, we pause, we ask for quiet, and we say, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Thy will be done. And that's the end of the paragraph. So I was like, okay, I guess I wait after that because there are no more words in the paragraph. You know, it was the end of the chapter. I was like, all right. And so I did that thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of times. And I'm not, I love hyperbole. That does not happen to be one of my hyperbole moments. I literally did it thousands of times. I would sometimes do it 100 times in a day. All, it said it really clearly, all moments of emotional disturbance and indecision, we pause, we ask for quiet, serenity prayer, thy will be done. I did it over and over, and somehow that process rewired my brain. It rewired my brain enough that all roads did not move to food. It somehow made it so that, like, at the end of doing that process, I would say, thy will be done, and I'd wait, and the next right action would come to me. It was, you know, brush your teeth. Or, you know, you're hungry, go get a meal. Or, you know, you're freaking out, pick out a piece of paper and write something. Or there were lots of angry dots. Like, the paper, sometimes my writing was like, stab, 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 rip, 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 you know, thank you. It wasn't necessarily actual writing in any literal sense of the word. It was a lot of, like, angry scribbles. Or it would be, you know, call a newcomer, go to a meeting, get back in bed. In early recovery, I needed to sleep a lot, and that was fine. In retrospect, I'm like, oh, I'm so grateful that I gave myself that gift, because my brain is rewiring. Like, it's hard work, you know? It's hard work to process an entire life's worth of emotions. Like, it's hard work. I demand more sleep. And sometimes it was like, okay, it's, you know, dark o'clock, and I'm planning to eat, so you know what? I'm going to bed. I don't care if it's 6 p.m. I'm just going to go get in the bed for the rest of the night and call it a day. And that was enough. And sometimes, you know, the recovery was, okay, I can't make it. I can't not eat. I can't not eat. And then I would do that process, and what would come back as the next right action is like, wait 12 seconds. So I'd wait 12 seconds. And then I would say, okay, now I'm going to go eat. And then, you know, it would come back like, how about this? We have a deal. It's like 11:15 or something. At midnight, you can have everything. Everything. Like, in the whole world, you can eat everything at exactly midnight. So just like for 45 minutes, can you do anything else in the entire world? Literally anything you feel like doing. Anything. It's all okay. But just for the next 45 minutes, can you do something else and then binge at midnight? And you know what? It worked. Like, that, what would happen? You know, sometimes I'm sure I binge at midnight, and that was okay, because that, my recovery wasn't strong enough to handle life without food yet. And that was okay. It was part of the process. And then eventually, midnight would come, and I had forgotten to think about it being midnight and being hungry anymore. Hungry, in quotes, because I was rarely ever hungry. You know, before recovery, my stomach growled, like, once every 7 years. You know, like, really growled, my stomach, not my throat, not my head, not some other imaginary source of food hunger thing. Like, my stomach very rarely growled. Now in recovery, it growls every day. But, you know, that process, and even that, like, pre-recovery, I can't make it to midnight. No matter what I tell myself, I can't make it to midnight because I am powerless over food. I am powerless over food. I am powerless over food. It has to be something greater than me intervening on my behalf. And sometimes it would be, you know, me, I'm on the way to binge. And I'm like, all right, higher power, you're the higher power, right? So here's my plan. I'm going to go binge. This is what I'm going to eat. So if you want to do something about it, notice this, like, bratty, angry tone. That was a lot of my prayers. Still is sometimes. Like, you better get in here, fool. Like, get on in here and handle it. You don't want me to binge? All right, stop me. And you know what would happen? I would get stopped. You know, somebody would call, something would happen, I'd need gas, you know, something would inevitably happen, and I would be stopped from the food over and over and over. And I'll still do that today. Like, if I'm having a rough day, I always take it back to the basics. Like, I go exactly back to my super simple plan of eating, and I'm like, okay, higher power, you know what? This day is bad. You created it. Why don't you deal with it, fool? Like, I love to curse at my higher power. I'm making it PG-13 for the crowd, but there's a lot more cursing involved generally. And, you know, I find it works. Like, you know, the big book talks about, like, you know, the higher power doesn't make too tough a term for those who approach. And I find that, like, I don't feel like too many people, if I was like, you, blah, 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 then they'd be nice to me. But my higher power is. I can curse up a storm. My higher power is like, come here, pal. get over here. I gotcha. We're cool. And somehow all those seconds, all those minutes, you know, going to the store and smelling a lot of soap for whatever. I have like 3,000 things of perfume from when I was newly abstinent. Like sometimes, you know, I would have to ask myself, someone had suggested, like, ask yourself what you really need. Not the super lame, I need food because I don't care about myself enough to actually give me what I really need. What do you really need in this moment? And it would be like, I need some nice sensory input. Thank you. I need a break. I need to rest. I need to talk to someone. I need a hug. I need any one of a million things. I need to do something fun. I need to watch some crappy television. Like whatever, you know, it's like, can I give myself what I really need instead of the bad solution, which is food? And, you know, I for whatever reason, like I said, it was a lot of, in the beginning, there was a lot of soap and perfume purchases. Okay, like I needed things that smelled good. I don't know why, but I did, and it worked, you know, in conjunction with working the 12 steps. All this stuff is great theory. Without the 12 steps, I'm nothing. I have nothing. I'm not abstinent. That is my experience to this day. I will resist the steps, you know, kicking and screaming, like, I feel like being angry. I feel like being sad. I don't want to work a step, you know. And the second I sat down with my little 4th step or 10th step or 11th step or whatever step I feel like working and do the deal, inevitably it works. It solves my problem. It makes me feel better in the way that food used to have to make me feel better. That's the amazing thing about the Big Book. It actually works. I'm not here 13 and a half years later because, like, I have nothing else to do. I'm here 13 and a half years later because it's incredibly freaking efficient and effective, period. That is my experience with OA. It actually solves my problem with food in the way that nothing up to OA had done before. That's why I keep coming back, you know? That's why I'm up here speaking. So I can remind myself, oh yeah, OA works. Oh yeah, that's what it was like before. And that's why I get to talk to newcomers because, you know, 12 and a half years of abstinence later, I don't necessarily remember how horrible it was to be in the food. I remember my last binge. I remember a lot of binges. But the visceral, painful hell torment that is being in this disease, the self-hatred, the wearing endless sack dresses and men's extra large overalls because I hated myself and none of you should look upon me. Like, all that self-hatred, I've forgotten a lot of it. It's slipped away. So I come back because when a newcomer talks, I, like, oh, I feel it. I remember it. I'm taken back there again and I'm like, oh yeah, you know what? I can spare the time to pick up my step work. I have that time to spare because I don't want that. I don't want what they have. Like, and that's, you know, it's like in the beginning I got to carry the mess because I didn't have a message to carry. Now that I have a message, I get to carry the message so I don't have to keep living the mess, you know? And I came back into the first, God, my room's like, I wasn't recovered for a first year, so everyone had to listen to me talk about how it wasn't working the whole first year I was in program. And then no one kicked me out. They're like, keep coming back, keep coming back, keep coming back, keep coming back. They listened to me, they loved me, they told me to keep coming back until eventually I had a message to carry. That's amazing that, like, I mean, I think there are a few places in the world where you can screw up for as long as you want. You don't have to work the steps. You don't have to be agreeable. You don't have to talk to anybody. You don't have to do anything anyone suggests, and no one's going to kick you out. As long as you're not, like, punching people. Thank you. You know, that's kind of phenomenal. That's amazing. That is a remarkable group of people that somehow we are. So, you know, I am incredibly grateful. I get to have a normal-sized body. Right on. That's why I came into OA, and I feel like it's important to say that because that is why I came into OA. But that's the tip of the iceberg. I got to love my body anywhere it was. I get to look at me in the mirror sometimes, and I don't look any that different than when, you know what I mean? Like, I'm a little older. This all just really changed. But, like, I get to look at me and be like, how did you get so good looking? I say that to myself in the mirror, like, damn, how did you get so good looking? You know? Like, I wear clothes that I love now. That's amazing. I'm actually building a bigger closet. You know why? Because I don't change sizes over and over again, so I have to keep, like, fitting into my clothes, which means Mama needs more closet space. That's all there's to it. I love clothes, it turns out. I didn't know that because I hated myself so much before that I couldn't enjoy it, you know? Thank you. So, you know, I get that part. That's awesome. That's a fun game to play. But I get the amount of freedom I have that I don't have to think about food. I don't think about food. 99.9. There is, like right now, just as an example, there's a piece of toast sitting on my plate. It's going to go bye-bye. It can go into the trash. I don't care about that toast. You know? That's amazing. There's food on my plate and I don't care about it. What the? Like, that's unheard of. There are bites of things in my fridge because I don't care about them. You know? And BT dubs, I also happen to get a spiritual life which solves my problems today and shows me how to exist in a world I don't know how to manage. This world is big. It's confusing. There's a lot of stuff I don't get. I could cry just thinking about that. There's a lot of stuff in this world and I don't have to know how to do it. I can just say, like, God, please handle the world. I can't. I can't do it. It's bigger than me. You know, and I get to have an emotional life. Like, I just got verklempt right there. I was almost crying. I didn't have emotions before. Now I'm like, crying. Isn't that cool? Like, I'm one of those people who could cry now. You know, I live more fully now because I have OA. I have a life because I have OA. And my time is up. So thank you all so much for allowing me to recover. Ah. I'm connected to things. How do I? Awesome. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
That is a... No! I do.